This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
As the news of coronavirus reverberates throughout the world, we at HRN are especially concerned about how coronavirus will impact our food system. We will use our platform to support the restaurant, agriculture, hospitality, and other food-related industries by maintaining our coverage and operations. As social distancing becomes the temporary norm, podcasts are more important than ever. There's never been a more crucial time to stay informed about the state of our food system and the ways that food connects our global community. We're sharing all of our COVID-19 coverage at heritageradionetwork.org/COVID-19, from interviews with nonprofit leaders and journalists, to firsthand accounts from chefs and restaurant owners, to reports on how this crisis is affecting regional farms. Our team is working remotely from all over to keep food radio alive. HRN needs your support more than ever to keep sharing essential stories and resources with our listeners. Make a donation of any amount. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Welcome to HRN Happy Hour. It is 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick, Brooklyn. But also today for me, somewhere is Southern Maine. I'm Katie Mosman-Wadler, host of Heritage Radio Network Happy Hour, and I'm joined by some lovely people today. Say hello, Hannah Forden.
Hello, hello. I am in Brooklyn this week, which is very exciting.
And we have our stalwart engineer, Matt Patterson, on as well.
Also in Brooklyn, but not in Bushwick.
Not in Bushwick. We have another very special guest today, also not in Bushwick, but has been in Bushwick so many times with HRN. I first met our guest today probably like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I would say now, as she was presenting her graduate thesis during my orientation in the NYU Food Studies graduate program. And through that, I was thinking today earlier when we were talking that that might have been the first time I actually heard of Heritage Radio Network. And this person has gone on to host multiple shows with HRN. Sari Kamen, welcome. Sari is the public programs manager at the Museum of Food and Drink and host currently of Food Without Borders.
Hi, guys. Woo-hoo. Thank you so much for that lovely intro.
Sari!
Hi! It's so fun to be with all of you on the internet.
The internet is where it's at these days.
It's where we live now.
And Sari, from whence are you joining us in the internet?
Well, I am currently in Saugerties, New York, which is in the Catskills area of upstate New York. This is where my in-laws live. So this is where I am at the moment, in the woods, which is very isolated per, you know, pandemic.
I, too, am in the boonies today, and I'm really enjoying it, but it is like a balmy 90-something degrees in Maine today, which is weird.
I didn't know it got that hot in Maine.
You know, we are all melting. And Maine is not really like equipped with air conditioning in most places for obvious reasons. So
come on, Maine.
But here we are. Here we are.
I blame Susan Collins.
We can blame her for a lot of things, but we'll get into that on a future episode.
Great.
I also, because it is happy hour and it is so, so hot, I'm going to open my beverage of choice, which is in fact local. Because I'm in Southern Maine, I'm drinking a pale ale from Tributary Brewing Company. A good friend, Todd Mott, is the brewer there, and this is their flagship beer, and it is super delicious. Anyone else have a tasty beverage today?
I have a Founders IPA. It is not local, but it's still tasty.
I'm drinking some bougie-ass Chardonnay.
Nice.
in my defense, actually, whatever. I don't need defense. I'll own it. Sometimes I drink Chardonnay. I've been really obsessed with making this artichoke recipe from Adina Sussman's cookbook Sababa, and it calls for white wine and garlic, so I made it the other night. So I just grabbed a white wine. It just this is not a good defense. I could have grabbed any white wine. I grabbed a bougie ass Chardonnay. So anyway, I cooked with it, and now I'm drinking it. So here we are.
Well, sir, you never have to defend your drinks to us.
Yeah. I don't know,
but also this I'm glad that you're cooking with wine that you want to drink.
I do.
Yeah, that's just an extra treat, because then you have an excuse to swig it while you're cooking.
As if you need an excuse, but yes, sure.
Exactly. And I'm shockingly not having an alcoholic beverage right now, because I am meeting a friend for takeaway tiki drinks after the show, and I know that they are not the kind of drinks that you stack with other drinks.
Right.
So I'm having some nice herbal sun tea.
So responsible.
Where are you going for that? In the hood.
Sam Lee and I, the famous formerly HRN intern, and I are going to Zombie Hut, which is a wonderful bar in my neighborhood in Carroll Gardens, and they are doing takeaway tiki drinks, and we're going to drink them on my stoop because it's really hot out.
I just want to say that I moved to Carroll Gardens in the year 2005, which was maybe a year before all of you were born. And I am so happy that Zombie Hut is still there, because that is the one place that has stood the test of time in that neighborhood. I can think of almost nowhere else that hasn't turned into something else. And it's amazing. It's like it's a time capsule in there. And I
love Zombie Hut. And in fact, I was born a little bit before 2005 in this very neighborhood.
In Zombie Hut.
In Zombie Hut. No, I was born in Caputo's.
Conceived and born.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're getting out there, Hannah, and also that Zombie Hut is alive and well. I just also want to acknowledge another artifact of the heat today is that you probably hear my computer just massively overheating. This is part of real life of not having an in-person studio during the pandemic, is we're all in our homes. I'm today choosing not to be in a blanket fort because of obvious reasons, but you know, all of our equipment is subject to real life, and here we are.
We'll probably hear my dog at some point.
Oh yeah, you've definitely heard my dog or my parents' dog go by, and you might hear, if you're really lucky, a super cranky, screaming, hot baby, which is really, really a good treat as well. We've been hearing a lot of that today.
Can I tell you guys something that's been happening up here?
Yes.
I know there's a lot, like a lot going on in the world. But up here, my dog has developed possibly a friendship, possibly a romance with a deer.
Ooh. Pictures or it didn't happen. I just please need send to us break pictures
down for me, like where the confusion is about whether or not the relationship is platonic. Like, I just need a little more information.
Okay. Well, I mean, the fact is it remains ambiguous, but I've almost never seen him so excited about another creature, which is why I feel like it's more than just like a casual passing friendship. And it's gone. This was day three that the same, well, who knows for sure, but I'm pretty sure, because I feel these things in my heart, that the same deer has returned to the yard where I sit outside and work, and just hung out and waited for my dog to notice it. And then when my dog did notice, ran over, the deer ran away, and then waited for my dog to catch up. And then they like had this little like cute like running chase pausing moment, and then yesterday they ran off together into the woods, and my dog was gone for 15 minutes and did not return, even though I called him. And that was the first time that's ever happened. Like, he's never run away, he's never not returned when I've called. And when he finally showed up, he looked like he needed a cigarette. Like, he was disheveled, like he had stuff in his hair. He looked like a little dazed, and he was like hot. I was like, what were you guys doing? And then today the deer returned to the exact same spot and like just laid down behind a bush and like waited to be noticed. And I'm sorry, that sounds very romantic to me.
Aww.
I don't know what's going on.
Everyone needs some quarantine love.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a Shih Tzu deer kind of thing that I don't question it. I respect it.
That's I love that amazing. Story.
Very exciting.
Wow.
Well, it's really nice to hear that all of the amazing events and social media engagements that we've been seeing come from you at MOFAD have been produced while you are enjoying the great outdoors and doggy deer romances. It really, it deepens my appreciation even more.
Yes.
It does add a whole new level.
Yes.
Well, Sari, I do want to talk about the programs that you're working on for MOFAD, but first I was hoping you would give a little bit of history. You have in fact been with HRN longer than any of us. And so, can you talk a little bit about how you first got involved with the network and your first show, The Morning After, and, how you kind of transitioned from doing that to doing Food Without Borders? And just take us through your timeline.
Yeah, I'd love to. Well, I started as an intern at Heritage Radio, and it came about because I was in the food studies program at NYU, as you also were, Katie, and referenced. And I was just interested in food media. I didn't really know that much. You know, when I started the food studies program, it was really a time for me to transition careers and start thinking about, you know, a sort of a new chapter in my life, knowing I wanted to do something in food, but wasn't really sure what direction I was headed. And I had a classmate in a food culture class named Leah Eden, and she told me that she was working at Heritage Radio, and it was a food radio station. And I thought, that was the coolest thing I'd ever heard. I had been a theater major in undergraduate in college, so I was interested in communications and thought that the radio station might be a really cool kind of intersection of those interests. And the radio station was looking for an intern to come on as a writer. And I didn't have much of a writing career at that point, but I, you know, was excited and had always enjoyed writing. So I came on as an intern, and it was pretty scrappy back then. I think there was, you know, maybe four of us at the most. It was Aaron and me and Jack Inslee and Leah. And then, you know, the rest were the folks who were working on the Heritage Meats, on the food side of things. And I started writing a little bit and doing some work for writing about shows. And those articles ended up getting published in Huffington Post because we had kind of a partnership agreement with them. So it was the first time I ever got published. It was the first time I ever really explored food writing. And it really opened up this, you know, whole new world of interest for me. And then little by little, I just got a little bit more ambitious in the internship program and started recording stories. And that was sort of the origins of the food news program. And would just record, you know, these little bits where I would call people up and kind of interrogate them about different food events that were happening around the country and things in the news. And it was great. It just really kind of set me on track. And then at some point there was a co-host named Jesse Kiefer who had been working on a show called The Morning After, which was a restaurant industry show. She was a sommelier, excuse me. And her co-host was leaving, moving to LA, and she was looking for someone else to step in. And so I was kind of at the right place at the right time. And because I'd had a lot of experience working in restaurants, which is, you know, sort of what got me interested in food, Jesse agreed to let me come on. And we worked on that show together for a pretty long time, a couple years, and we had chefs and other sommeliers and guests from the restaurant industry, and it was very lighthearted and fun, and it was great. And then Jesse ended up moving to LA, and I did the show by myself for a little while. It wasn't quite the same, you know, a lot of the show was based on the rapport that we had. But I wanted to stick with it. And then the presidential election happened in 2016. And that sort of changed. I mean, that did change the whole world. It changed everything. And I just kind of found myself waking up in the morning and not feeling very motivated to go into the studio and talk to chefs. I just wasn't that interested in restaurants, I guess. It didn't feel meaningful. It didn't feel important at the time. Especially since so much of the restaurant industry was sort of centered on, you know, the celebrity chefs, a lot of them being whites, a lot of them being men. And that's kind of what our show focused on as well. You know, not intentionally, but that's just where we were at in the world. And I took a season off, and I wanted to sort of recalibrate and think about, you know, what I wanted to do with this platform. And you were generous enough to take a meeting with me and talk about kind of rethinking what show I would be working on. And I remember pitching Food Without Borders to you as an opportunity just to sit down with different folks working in food who also happened to be immigrants. And it was right around the time that the first travel ban happened with President Trump. And it was just, you know, something I wanted to do. And it was mostly just about listening and not really about talking. And it was just a chance to sit down and say, you know, you're an immigrant, you live in the United States, you work in food. What does that feel like right now? How does your work in food keep you connected to your heritage? How does it help you in some ways assimilate, but in some ways introduce, you know, the country that you've emigrated from? And just how does it feel right now? What does your world look like? And that's where Food Without Borders got started.
I'm really happy we're talking today, Sari, about this too, because of the Supreme Court vote that said today that Trump can't end DACA.
Yeah.
Which is really enormous. And I think, like, I remember when we were first talking about Food Without Borders and kind of conceptualizing that show and how much desperation we were all feeling with sort of these campaign promises that were so menacing at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's a really happy day, I think, to circle back to this idea, but there's still, you know, there's so much work to do and so much going on. And you've made a little bit of a pivot recently to incorporate some of the goings on at MOFAD. Do you want to talk about your role at MOFAD and currently, like, how that's shifted with the pandemic into digital programming?
Yeah, sure. Sorry, my dog just tried to jump up on the bed and fell down. It was hilarious. I wish you guys had seen it.
This is what we miss by not having video.
Exactly. So at MOFAD, where I run the programs, we were in March, 1 week away from opening a new exhibition that had been in the works for 2 years called African/American Making the Nation's Table, which is really a celebration of the African-American contribution to American food culture. So 1 week before we were going to open the doors at the Africa Center where the exhibition is, you know, we were faced with the reality that we were in the midst of a pandemic and that would not be happening, which was really disappointing, of course, for so many reasons. And I had 6 months worth of programming all lined up, bringing in, you know, chefs, authors, beer makers, oyster shuckers from all over the country, who were, you know, going to be part of these many untold stories about African-American food. So instead of opening that and instead of, you know, starting that program series, we realized, like everyone else, that we had to shift to online programming, and which was very daunting to me because I am not very technically savvy. But, you know, it was an interesting challenge just to try and figure out what online programs means and what even makes sense to put online and, you know, what kind of programs are people willing to, like, sit down in front of a computer and watch and spend time with. You know, we're the Museum of Food and Drink, so, you know, most of our programs are centered around food and drink and coming together as community to eat together, to break bread. So it's been a really interesting challenge to kind of figure out the workarounds and what that means if we're not coming together and sharing meals and, you know, having this thing to kind of celebrate together. But it's been good. It's been a challenge that I have really, really enjoyed. And it's also been, you know, kind of a tremendous opportunity to reach out to community that I didn't even know existed. Because we're not restricted by being in New York City, we've had guests join our programs. We've had panelists from all over the country, and in some cases, all over the world. Next week, we have a program called Harlem Rent Party, which is inspired by the Harlem Rent Party's of the 1920s and the 1930s and even in the 1940s a bit. The idea being that during this era, which is the beginning of the Great Migration in the early 1920s, when so many Black folks moved from the South to the North, they went to Harlem. And because of this influx, the rent or the landlords took advantage and started raising the rents. And it was very unfair. And in order to sort of mitigate these costs, people would open up their homes and have parties. And this became known as Harlem rent parties. And they were generally held on Saturday nights and Thursday nights. And they would invite people in and there would be dancing, there would be music. A lot of the great jazz performers kind of got their start and their notoriety during this time. There'd be food. And, you know, everyone would like throw in some money and that's how they would make their rent. So we were really inspired by this concept because we need some money too. Our exhibition is closed and we don't have that ticket revenue. And luckily enough, we've had an incredible group of advisors working on our exhibition, African/American. And several of them are part of this virtual experience. So we have Dr. Jessica Harris. She is, I think, you know, unequivocally the foremost scholar on African-American culinary history. She's going to talk about the history of Harlem rent parties. We have Chef Omar Tate, who's amazing. He has a pop-up dinner series called Honeysuckle, where he just kind of infuses his food with his heritage. And he's created a menu. I mean, obviously, we won't, you know, be sitting around a table together, but we have recipes to disseminate. And we have an ingredient box that people can order so they can cook along at home. We have Tonya Hopkins. She's a food and drink scholar. She's created an era-specific cocktail called the Harlem Glory. And we have a performer who is actually living in London right now. She's American, but she was most recently on the West End. Her name's Marisha Wallace. She's incredible. And she's going to be singing some jazz songs. So we're all going to come together for this like joyous occasion and celebrate and talk about food, talk about drink. And hopefully, you know, everyone's going to be like cooking the same meal of fish and grits and gingerbread cake and sit down and open up their laptops at the same time. And it'll be like this sort of larger extended community, and I'm really excited about it. So I feel very inspired by this like global network that we've tapped into. You know, I know we've had people come to our programs from as far as Japan and Australia who've messaged me and said, I've always wanted to come to a MOFAD program, but I don't live in New York. In fact, I live on the other side of the world, and this is the first time I've been able to do that. So there are some silver linings, I would say, to this very challenging moment that we're in. And I really want to like celebrate those moments as well.
And I want to point out that like listeners also can enjoy some of the MOFAD content on the Food Without Borders feed. But also, Sari, where should they be looking primarily for upcoming events like this one? Is MOFAD.org or social media the best place?
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. And I want to thank you guys again, because it's been so wonderful to collaborate with you. I started an online video series when, you know, this whole COVID thing happened, because I wanted to think about, you know, the impact of COVID on the food and beverage industry, but not just restaurants. You know, I think there was a lot of conversations that were happening at the beginning with, you know, these big chefs in the news, like a lot of the Danny Meyers and the Tom Colicchios of the world were talking. And I thought it would be really meaningful to kind of look at the peripheral voices in this conversation and sort of recenter POCs and women and immigrants who are also being impacted by COVID in food and beverage. So I started an online video series called At the Table, where I was just, you know, on Zoom with folks having these conversations. And you guys came up with a fantastic idea to run the audio clips of those conversations through my podcast. So you can find all of our programs on our website, which is, like you said, www.mofad.org. And we have a tab under programming that's just online programming. So if you go there, you'll see the At the Table series. You'll see the MOFAD Supper Club series, which is the Harlem Rent Party is under that. That's like kind of the more ambitious virtual dinner party, so to speak, where there's often a box element included. Like, for example, we have a program tonight with a wonderful company called Eat Off Beat, which is a refugee staffed catering company. And, you know, looking back at Food Without Borders right at the beginning, Manal Kahi, who runs Eat Offbeat, she was one of my first guests on Food Without Borders. And she started this company that's all refugee chefs and cooks. And it was right around, you know, that initial immigrant ban that she came on and talked about that. So we've had a long relationship that started with Heritage Radio. So tonight we're partnering with them on a wonderful program that explores the experiences of Black refugees. We have a Senegalese chef, a Nigerian chef, and they're going to talk about their experience as, you know, refugees working in food in the United States. So those are there. We've been doing a series called The Takeout, which is about the impact of COVID on AAPIs and Asian American populations. Last night we had a conversation about food media and tokenization that came out of the idea, or not the idea, but came out of as a response to the xenophobia that was directed towards Asians and Asian Americans because of COVID. Sort of the idea that food media was trying to mitigate some of that xenophobia and xenophobia by, you know, publishing recipes, Asian recipes, and looking at whether that was a way to combat some of the xenophobia or just tokenize Asians and Asian Americans. And because, you know, the world has changed again and again and again, that conversation transitioned not so much to be a conversation about COVID, but a conversation to really be about this reckoning in food media that's happening right now. And it was really interesting and wonderful to see how flexible these panelists were and how engaged the audience was, who really wanted to talk about this very significant shift that's happening in food media right now, especially because we had Priya Krishna on the panel, who, you know, is at Bon Appetit and is one of the people who called out the former editor-in-chief, Adam Rappaport, who's no longer there.
Side note about Adam Rappaport, I was just reading this Jezebel article where they shared an email exchange with him, with some really interesting back and forth with him, making some really inappropriate requests to be off the record, and like them kind of deciding to publish anyway, as a very formerly revered editor should really know kind of what expectations are with press around what is on and off of the record. So just head on over to Jezebel and read that exchange. But Sari, we're so grateful for your contributions and for, you know, really creating Food Without Borders at a time when it was so desperately needed, and also like finding ways to continue that and keeping it super relevant as the world is literally changing so fast every day, and every day it's something new. But we are so grateful to you for keeping it timely and just being nimble and really providing a service that I think is not being had elsewhere. And we're just so proud of everything you've done. We need to take a short break, and we will be right back after this with more of HR and Happy Hour.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's. A super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Welcome back to HRN Happy Hour. We are so happy today to be joined by HRN's own Sari Kamen. Welcome back, Sari, to the show.
Thank you.
As we were in the break, we were thinking about sort of the retrospective of your career at HRN. And I was wondering if you could, you've had some incredible guests on the shows, plural, that you have hosted, plus, you know, in some of your other reporting for the network, could you maybe call out like a few of your you can't play favorites, but a few top guests or guests who really made an impact on you?
Oh, man, yes. you know, it's so funny because Katie, you and I were talking about this before, that I had some big names on the morning after, and every time it was like shocking that they said yes. Like, how did that happen? but you know,
like who were you thinking of?
I mean,
like, who are these big names?
Odalenghi? You know, like I remember reaching out to his publicist, and somehow that happened, and then Yeah. He came to Bushwick and like sat down and talked to me, and he had just come out with his cookbook, Nopi, which is, you know, one of his restaurants in London. And he was so sweet and kind and lovely and just an absolute joy to talk to. And I was lucky enough to, you know, travel to London not that much later than that. I mean, I don't know, within the year, and say hello to him at his restaurant. And that was super exciting. And
I think I was actually an intern when you had him on the show. And I just remember, like, I had to go over to the studio and Aaron was like, oh, yeah, yo, Temo Nalengi's over there. Like, you might see him.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
I was like, okay, no big deal.
I mean, no big deal, right? And David Leibovitz came on when he was, you know, in town hanging out. And we talked about Paris, and it was awesome. And, you know, I can't not think about Anthony Bourdain, who was one of my guests. It was one of the most amazing moments probably of my, I mean, definitely of my career, but also of my life. I mean, it was my greatest hero, and just being able to sit down and talk to him for 10 minutes, which is what I got, was unbelievable. I mean, I don't think I've ever been more nervous in my life than the moments leading up to having that interview. And it wasn't in the HRN studio. I actually got to go to an event that he was part of, for, it was like a Scotch event, and he was, you know, the face of some new like brand or something. And it was all because of Michael Harlan Turkell, because he was supposed to go to that event and then he couldn't do it. And then he asked me if I wanted to, and I was like, hell yeah, that is happening. And somehow I got like 10 minutes with Bourdain, and he was lovely. He was so nice. And he was like, hey, what's up? I'm Tony. And as soon as he started to talk, I was like, okay, this is good. Like, I'm not nervous anymore. He's just a person. And he was just really thoughtful. He like took time after every question. He didn't have any canned answers. And, you know, I'll never forget it. I will always, always cherish that. So, yeah. But Food Without Borders was, you know, obviously a really different show. It's never been about celebrities. In fact, it's like intentionally not been about celebrities. It's just about people. So there've been some, you know, amazing people that I've met, and a lot of them have stayed friends. I would say the person that comes to mind, and I think about this person all the time, is a guy named Abdi, who runs a juice shop in Harlem. He's Ethiopian. His name's Abdi Abu Jabel. And he just had one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard. He was a refugee. He was in a refugee camp in Kenya for a while after going there from Ethiopia. And then when he moved to the United States with like no money and no English, he was really sick. He couldn't figure out what was wrong. He was living in Harlem in kind of a food desert area where he didn't have access to any really affordable, healthy food. So he kept eating more junk food and getting sicker. And he didn't know why, because he went to doctors who were giving him medication but not talking to him about nutrition. And finally he figured it out, and he was like, oh, my health is impacted by the food that I eat. And it got him really interested in learning how to eat better. And he realized that he wanted to create something so that other people in his neighborhood were able to access healthy food. So with like no resources at all, he started a juice restaurant, and it's all about the flavors that he brought over from Ethiopia. It's called Jimma's Oasis Juice Bar. And when he came to Heritage Radio to talk with me, he brought, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 different juices for me to try in this like gorgeous spread of Ethiopian food. He brought, I don't know, just several different dishes. He brought bread. I mean, he just had like just this huge picnic and laid it out in front of me and was just so gracious and humble. And it really moved me just to talk to someone who had so little to work with but had accomplished so much. And I just remember him saying something to the extent of like, you know, when you have nothing to begin with, there's nothing to lose. Because I kept asking him like how he had the courage to create a business. Because I think, you know, most of us who are privileged growing up in the United States would say, you know, if I don't have money, like, why would I ever try and create something? Like, I don't have the resources. And he just said, you know, when you're in America, you have so many resources already. And that's what he was working with. And it just really changed my perspective of what it was like to just pursue something that mattered to you. So I have so much admiration for him. He really taught me a lot. So that's probably my favorite episode of Food Without Borders. And yeah, you should go listen to it if you haven't.
That was all such a good encapsulation, I think, of like what is amazing about like HRN's content, and also just the sort of pleasure of getting to interview a broad range of people, because I'm sorry, there are children screaming right now and there's nothing I can do about it. But you never really know like what's going to come out of it. And oftentimes, like, I feel like there's very few times when someone doesn't surprise you. Mm-hmm. Whether that's, you know, you're meeting someone who doesn't quite meet your expectations, or someone who entirely like blows you away. I just love how you sort of painted a really full picture of that, from interactions with celebrities to, you know, small scale entrepreneurs like Abdi.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I had never met him before, and I read an article about him in Bon Appetit, and, you know, it was this sort of like charming back and forth over Facebook Messenger where we talked about him coming to the show, but I really had no idea what to expect. So when he arrived, you know, with this like feast, I was just, it was amazing. I mean, I had no idea who I was meeting and who I was encountering. And like, I think about that conversation all the time. I mean, Abdi changed me. Like that was like a pinnacle conversation that I had, and I will never forget it. And I'll always be grateful to him for that.
I love that.
I love that story. And you made me so hungry. We all got to try his food. We did that rooftop event back when we did parties and things. At 100 Bogart, when we did Changing the Conversation, which is archived on our site. But if you were there in person, you got to have Abdi's incredible juices and injera and incredible Ethiopian food. And of course, like predictably, he brought an enormous spread. We were like, okay, here's the number of people. Like, this is what we're thinking. And he just came and blew us all out of the water.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
It was so incredibly delicious. And we were up there on the roof and it was sunset. His food and juices were so colorful. And I just like had this like absurdly loaded up plate. And it was like the entire rainbow of everything. And I was like the happiest.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so delicious. It's so beautiful. So yeah. Gracious.
So, Sari, we have a really silly new game that we've been playing for socially distanced happy hour. Okay. Usually we do trivia, but we thought since none of us are in the same room that we sort of adapted it. So it's a combination of I Spy and 20 questions, okay, basically, where we will ask you to pick something that you can see right now. And we have 20 questions to guess what it is.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. But do you come up with the questions, or I come up with the, or is it like?
Yeah, so we're going to come up with the questions. I can keep track of them, but basically we're going to ask you, like, in the 20 questions theme, they're all yes or no answers.
Okay.
What you need to do is look around your room and pick an item.
Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Wait, got ready? It. Like, you have the item?
I got the item.
Okay. Hannah, you're keeping track of our numbers?
I will keep track, yes.
Are you using Kat's patented method?
I forget what it is.
That's fingers.
Counting on
my
fingers.
I am using all of my fingers, yes. That was my plan.
All 20 fingers.
All right. Well, I feel like we got to throw this one. Dylan's not here, but we'll start with her patented first question of, Sari, is it bigger than your head?
No.
Ooh.
Well, that's exciting. It's always bigger than the head.
Is it a piece of decor?
No.
Is it food related?
Yeah.
Mm.
Can you eat it?
Yes.
Is it a fruit?
No.
No.
Is it perishable?
What I would, side note, what things that you can eat are not perishable?
like a can, like, okay, I'm thinking of the category of like non-perishables, like, is it an unopened can of tuna or is it like a piece of sashimi?
Okay, so
don't answer that, Siri.
Okay. Is it something that is ready to eat or that would need to be prepared?
That's not a yes or no question.
Oh, right. Mm. Well, yes, ready to eat. No, needs to be prepared.
No, Hannah. No.
What?
No,
you can't the hell?
Is it ready to eat?
Yes.
Serious point.
Wait, and we said it was not a fruit?
Correct.
Is it
Hannah, how many questions?
No.
Oh. Ooh. Well, I kind of want to ask, like, okay, sidebar, Siri, don't answer.
You always want to.
She did talk about, I know, sorry. I can't see you guys. She did talk about her beverage earlier. Wait, hold on, Siri. Are you consuming it right now?
No.
Oh.
Oh, wait, but there was a dish.
Wait.
What was?
It was artichoke.
What was she
dip.
Making? Oh, yeah.
Right?
Does oh, it yeah, have artichokes
well, but
in
she
it?
She made that the other day.
Okay, guys, we have you wait, 10 okay, out of 20 questions. It, 10 out of 20.
Is it a single ingredient?
Yes.
Ooh, hesitation. Mm.
Has it been cooked?
Yes.
Does it contain wheat?
No.
Ooh. It's like gluten-free sourdough.
Yeah, right.
Cheese perfected Will's, like, what was that flour he was trying to use that was not?
Oh, yeah. The buckwheat? Yeah. Sari, did someone in your household, including you, make it?
No.
I should have asked. That was a squandered question. There were so many better ways to get at that.
Okay.
Oof. We're like getting colder.
Would you describe it as savory?
Good one, Hannah.
Yes.
Hmm. Okay. Can we do a quick recap?
Yeah. What it's do like, we know about this food item?
It's not a fruit or a vegetable.
Uh-huh,
it's
and
it's been,
savory.
It's been cooked. It's savory.
But it's like one ingredient.
No.
It is.
Wait, is that part true?
Yeah, that's what she said.
Oh, okay.
It is perishable. They didn't make it. Is it served room temperature?
Yes.
Okay, we have four more questions.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Oh, we're miles away from this.
Does it contain dairy?
No.
What?
Well, I was thinking cheese. It could be cheese. Single All ingredient, right. Not fruit or vegetable. Okay.
Yeah. But it's cooked, right?
Yeah. I might be kind of wrong.
Well, cheese is cooked, arguably.
Can I modify the single ingredient question?
Yes, you can.
Oh, okay.
It's not actually a single ingredient, but it's a single item.
Well, this whole game is going to an asterisk.
Yeah,
an asterisk in the record books, right? Because when Kat and Dylan come in and they're like, man, you really screwed the pooch on this HRN trivia, we're going to be like, no, man, she lied to us.
Wait, what did you say?
Sorry.
Hold on, what did you say?
Nothing.
Siri's coming long. After you over in the internet.
I just think you should think of, say that again.
Wait, oh my
is there
God.
A lie?
Are you
holding
your dog and are you called? What are you saying? What?
No, wait. Is there a lie? Like L-Y-E?
Oh my God.
Wait, I thought you were doing something like so. Oh God, that was
okay. So
question.
We have two questions left, and
oh
Sari's
God.
Mad at us. So
all right,
we
wait.
Gotta get it together.
She wanted,
wait, why was she saying to say it again? I think she's
yeah,
playing a game
so
here.
She is playing a game, and I said too many things. I did say the phrase "screw the pooch," which made me think it's her good life can't.
Oh. Sorry. We didn't ask who was going to eat it.
Is it a dog biscuit?
No.
God damn
is it. But is it? Oh, I wish we
this
had
is our last question.
Who is supposed to eat it? Because dogs eat other things that aren't biscuits.
But wait, but you can't ask who is supposed to eat it.
No, but we could have said, is the dog supposed to
eat it? Okay.
But we're not asking the question yet because we're strategizing. Hmm.
But are we on our last question? Because then you're supposed to ask what the thing is. Like you have to. Right. We can't. All right. So you got to pick something. We got to just
this
like
is for
go
all
for
the marbles.
It. Hail Mary.
I nominate Matt.
Yeah, Matt. I got nothing.
You really think that I've been paying more attention? Do you want to know what my notes say right now? It says eat it, savory, cooked, and then I've like drawn a lot of squares. I think I got distracted.
It's okay. I think I might have heat stroke, so
basically I don't know what's going on.
We don't know what it is, but we have hieroglyphics that represent it.
Yeah. They look oh. This looks like this piece of paper looks like all of my notes from high school, which isn't okay. It's not great.
Look where
should
we you
just
wound
beg
up.
For Sari's mercy, yeah. Or should we use
no,
our
we
question?
Have to make a guess. We have to use the last question. I suspect that we're on to something with the pooch.
Well, you're the dog owner in this conversation, so I defer to you.
Okay, Sari, is it dog food?
Yes!
Oh my god!
Wait. Okay. Yeah.
It's not a biscuit.
It's not a biscuit.
It's just, oh you're, just holding, you're just casually holding a handful of dog food.
Wait, did I?
Guys, we won. She didn't say she was holding it, Matt.
That absolutely right. was oh, not right. part of it.
Yeah, okay. I don't know why. Oh. In my mind, you were, never mind.
Okay, it's an.
We won. That was so hard.
It was so hard. It's an open can of salmon dog food, like wet food.
Ooh. Oh, wait. So my can of tuna question was not like so far off.
It was pretty close.
I also understand why is it one ingredient was so difficult because it's marketed to be one ingredient. And then you were like, oh, wait, no, there's no way. This is one ingredient.
Yeah, it's definitely not well, I'm one glad. Ingredient, but it is like one can of dog food, right?
Yeah.
So that was.
I almost said kibble, and I'm glad I didn't say that because then we would have lost.
Yeah, it's not kibble. It's his like wet fishy food. He's a pescatarian like me.
Is he really?
I mean, mostly. I mean, not by choice.
He didn't like tell you that one day. He's like, now that I'm best friends with a deer, I have an announcement to make.
Well, I mean, I know for a fact that. His favorite foods, like mine, are anchovies and like other tinned
fish. Yum.
So, you know, I'm just giving him what he likes.
You're such a good dog, Mom. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that was so hard, but I'm really proud of us. Last week we lost pretty handedly, so.
It was really hard. You guys.
Glad we all got there.
And I'm sorry that you thought I was mad at you, Matt.
No.
Up to my face. I was like, say that again.
No, why don't you come over here to Socrates and say it again?
I didn't think that. I just like you were like, say that again, and I was like, oh man, I just talked for like way too long. I don't feel like it. I thought it was an internet connectivity thing because that's the world I live in now.
Yeah. It was so funny that of all phrases you threw the pooch.
Oh my god.
I thought it was like a pretzel or a bagel or something with lye in it.
Oh my god.
I hope there's not lye.
Such a nerd.
Yeah. Well, we've proven one thing is that we're not getting any better at this game.
Yeah, high on intuition, low on intellect. That's our motto here.
That's
I mean, that was a tough question when you were like, can you eat it? Because I'm like, well, technically, yes. But,
yeah. Sorry, I have like
oh,
1 minute left.
I ate a solid handful of milk biscuits in my childhood days. Is that what they're called? Milk biscuits?
Yeah.
The little milk bones. Treats?
Milk they're bones. Milk bones. Oh, yeah. Well, as it's right. On cue, I've got a hungry baby. Sari, thank you. So much. It has been an absolute joy having you, and I can't wait to have you back on again. And I hope you guys have a terrifically successful event tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks, Harry. Thank you, everyone. Thank you to Jess Krentich, who will be engineering the show.
Thank you, Jess. Miss you and love Thank you, Hannah. Thank you, Matt. Sarah, we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Katie.
Bye, guys.
HR and Happy Hour is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.